Blog Talk Radio.
Milton, and today we're talking about the federal government, Jones Service Administration with Albert Gossip. This is our new podcast, and I would like to tell everyone that Mr. Gossip is one of my, he's one of the people who has helped us down through the years with the Brunner's Help Foundation, and this new podcast is new to me, it's just like it is to him. So we're both learning, and I hope you all be patient with us because I'm enjoying it because we can reach more people. And Mr. Garza, I know that you're probably online now, but I want to let them know that you are the General Service Administration Small Business Specialist, and he's over the regional office there in Fort Worth, Texas. So Mr. Garza, would you like to go ahead and tell them who you are.
Hi, this is Albert Garza with GSA. Hi, Ms. Melton. How are you doing?
Oh, that's fine, Mr. Garza.
Thanks a lot for having me on your podcast. I look forward to the discussion tonight.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Garza, could you tell us a little bit about GSA? We know that they are the main component of everything that the government buys. They are the federal government. They make sure everything is right within all the facilities. So, but can you share with me? That's what I think. But I want you to explain to us what do you do there with the GSA, and what
do
your office oversees?
Sure. Thanks a lot. And then if I go into too much detail, feel free to go ahead and stop me, or if you have any questions, feel free to tell me, and I can feel free to interject your questions if you like to. So let me go ahead and start with the beginning. The U.S. General Services Administration, also known as GSA, was created back in 1949 by President Truman and the Congress. And the reason why they did that is because right after World War II, they thought it would be best, instead of if we were trying to buy, a ballpoint pen or something like that, it's not really good for the federal government to have, 25 different contracts for a ballpoint pen or paper clips or paper or anything like that. It's much better to have just one contract. And so that's why the General Services Administration was created, to make it a little bit more efficient for the federal government to do business and also save money also. Because, of course, as you can guess, when you only have one contract that's buying, you know, ballpoint pens or paper clips or paper and things like that, it's much easier to get better discounts and better prices from industry when you do it that way. So what happens over the years is GSA has always been known as the federal government's landlord and housekeeper. And the reason why is because we have two major divisions within GSA. The first division is known as our Public Building Service. And what they do is they take care of all the federal buildings and courthouses and land ports of entry and other specialized federal buildings around the country. And so we have quite a portfolio of buildings, and if you'd like to, we can talk about that. Not only do we construct the buildings, but we also maintain them and manage them. And so we're also looking for what we call leases, because as you, I don't know if you know this or not, but even though GSA owns a whole lot of federal buildings and courthouses around the country, we also lease a whole lot of our facilities also. As a matter of fact, about half of our portfolio is leases and the other half is stuff that we own for the taxpayers. The second part of GSA is known as the Federal Acquisition Service, and they're the ones that buy the paper and the paper clips and the staplers and the and all the other stuff. But that was traditionally what they used to do. But now the Federal Acquisition Service is also involved with services. And so that could be anything like from management consulting to advertising and marketing to engineering services to services like for translation and stuff like that, and then also all types of services like janitorial services and then, you know, security guard services, and it's pretty much anything under the sun. And so those are the two major programs for GSA. And so the reason why I'm part of it, of GSA, is we are known as the small business office. And what we do is we want to make sure that small businesses have opportunities to provide not only these products but also these services to the federal government. And the great thing about when you become a GSA contractor, not only can you work in your local area, which is quite great, but we also have contract vehicles available to where you can work across your region, or you can work across the nation, or you can even go international, because as you can guess, the federal government has activities located around the world with the Defense Department and the State Department and other federal agencies. And so conceivably, if you get involved with GSA contracting, you could work around the world doing different types of services and stuff. So hopefully tonight we can talk a little bit more detail about, you know, all those opportunities are available, and I would like to touch upon that. But I just wanted to give you the idea of what's going out there. And what happens is on the small business office, we are a group of people located across the country, and I'm here in Fort Worth, Texas. I also have another staff member that helps me here in the regional area, but then we have staff members located across the country, and so we can help you. And there's are ways that I can show you how to find all of these small business specialists at GSA.gov. And GSA.gov is our website, our homepage, and hopefully we'll talk in a little bit more detail about how to utilize the GSA.gov website to find opportunities.
Yes, yes. If I want everybody to know that's listening on online, they can always call in and ask questions. And our call-in number is 563-999-3739. And if you would like to talk with Mr. Garza or ask a question or have a question, just push the number one. Push the number one. Now, Mr. Garza, one of the things that I like bragging about and telling people about is how much I've enjoyed working with GSA. And when I say that, it's because when I started my business out, I started out selling bags. And one of your GSA employees visited my home one day and saw my bags. His name was Willie Heath. I don't know if you remember Willie Rowe, but he saw my bags.
And yes, I do.
You remember him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's my predecessor.
Okay. Well, he is the one that actually helped me learn about GSA, because I never knew about GSA. And when I learned about GSA, the sky was the limit. The sky was the limit. And if I tell people, if you have a staff, if you have three or four people that's in your in your office working with you. It's a very, very good organization to work with, to get contracts with, and even if you have a family business, such as we, like we did, it's a very lucrative business. Mr. Garza, I would like for you to explain to them about the BPA that a person may have with GSA and get with GSA. Also, with the executive order for 2021 that was given out in 2021 from the president. One of the reasons why I chose to do this podcast, because I wanted to get this word out to everybody that I can. And working in community workshops where we may get 10 to 30 people was not enough. This podcast is going all across the world. And I know not only are we doing what the Lord would have us to do, but I'm just happy to be able to do it, to show people that they can make money. They can make a business. They can create their business and make money. And GSA is a good tool to work with. So if you want to kind of elaborate about that, if this executive order is affecting set-asides, I would love for them to hear of that. And one of the things, Mr. Garza, you may not can say this, but I would like to say that as long as I've been in business, I never was asked to take a government contracting officer out to lunch. I could not take that person out to lunch. I could not give that person a Christmas card. I couldn't do anything like that to show my appreciation. And they was always there to help me. So, in other words, tell them about that, please, if you don't mind. Share that with them.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. That's a fantastic thing to mention about doing business with the federal government, especially with GSA. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoy working with GSA so much, because at GSA, you know, we're not buying spaceships. We're not buying aircraft carriers. We're not buying nuclear weapons and stuff like that. We're buying things that small businesses especially can get involved with. We're buying things that a lot of small businesses provide. And so it's very easy for GSA to do business with small businesses as much as possible. Let me give you, for instance, if I may. Like you were talking about how you got involved with federal procurement and stuff like that. It's very interesting because within GSA, like I mentioned earlier, one of our services is known as the Federal Acquisition Service. They have a program known as the GSA Schedules Program. And the schedule is essentially just a list of contractors. And what happens is if you want to get into this program, what you do is you make an offer to GSA to enter this program. Currently, right now, in the generals, in the GSA's Multiple Award Schedule, that's the formal name of it, or Multiple Award Schedule, or MAS for short, what it is right now, currently we have over 18,000 contractors in that program, and I don't know if you know this or not, but we currently have 80% of those 18,000 contractors are small businesses. And so that's one of the reasons why a lot of federal agencies like to use the GSA Schedules program, because that's where they know where they can find small businesses. And when you have a GSA Schedule contract, you've already been vetted by GSA. So in other words, you've already gone through all the federal bureaucratic rules and stuff like that, and your prices have already been vetted and stuff like that. So when you get that contract from GSA, and it's a five-year contract, and it's nationwide in scope if you want to do it that way, and then what happens is you're able to go onto the schedule, which is just a list of contractors, and it's available at gsa.gov, and what happens is federal agencies go to that schedule, and they essentially window shop, but through the Internet. And when they window shop, they're able to locate small businesses either in their local area or across the country or however they want to do business. And they might sometimes look for people that are have the lowest price or maybe that will probably offer the best value on doing it. And so the other thing that I like about the GSA Schedules program is we have all types of social economic statuses. And in the federal government, social economic status is the name of the game, because let's say, like, if you're an African-American or a Hispanic or Asian-American or something like that, you can qualify as a small disadvantaged business. And I don't know if you know this or not, like you already mentioned this, Melton, you're right. President Biden and Vice President Harris has already issued a memo to all federal agencies to increase the goals for small disadvantaged businesses. So and at GSA, we currently have a goal of about 21% or so for small disadvantaged businesses. And I don't know if you know this or not. Let me just give you some data, because I think you have to – when you hear 21%, you say, that doesn't sound that great. But in the federal government, I don't know if you know this or not, but right now, currently, the federal government buys over $600 billion worth of procurement every year. So 1% of that –
Mr. Garza, what did you say? Repeat that again.
Sure. Well, right now, the federal government in total spends over $600 billion every year on procurement. Now, a lot of that is, you know, like for aircraft carriers and rocket ships and stuff like that. But a lot of it is also for, you know, buying, you know, paper and paper clips and services and all that other stuff, too. But what I was getting at is you know, when we say that the federal our GSA has a 21% goal and stuff like that, let me just point that out to you, because in the federal government, what happens is if 1% of $600 billion is $6 billion. So if the federal government in total is trying to increase its small business goals, every time we move up that percentage by 1%, it's over $6 billion. And so that's quite a lot of money. And so that's what's so great about it, and that's one of the reasons why I'm glad you invited me on your show, because what we want to do is we want to get out the message out there that it's prime time for small disadvantaged businesses to go after federal contracts, especially through the GSA Schedules Program, because when you get on the GSA Schedules Program, you get your foot to the door, because once you have that contract, you get to do business not only in the local area but throughout the country. And so it's a great way for you to build your business, and because it's a five-year contract, you can have quite a lot of time to build that business. And when you become a GSA Schedule contractor, you get free advertising on the GSA Schedule system. And like I mentioned earlier, that's where federal agencies across the country and actually around the world window shop for contractors. And so if you're on that list, you're able to market your products or services to federal agencies. And so there's a lot of other services that are out there. And so it's a great way to do it. I might want to also point out, you know, small disadvantaged businesses is just one portion of it. We also are looking for women-owned businesses. We're also looking for businesses that might be owned by veterans or service-disabled veteran-owned businesses. We're also looking for businesses that might be in what we call hub zones. And hub zones are specific geographic areas within cities that might have high poverty rates. And because if you locate your business in those particular zones, you also have specialized programs where you can get government work, because what we're trying to do is encourage people to be employed in high poverty areas and stuff like that. And so this helps certain communities around the country with economic development and stuff like that. And so those are the kind of things that the federal government is always trying to do. And like you might already mention, you know, one good thing about working with the federal government is we do have small business goals. And so the president and Congress wants us to always meet or exceed those goals every year. But the way that we're able to do that is make sure that we always are encouraging more and more small businesses to get on programs like the GSA Schedules Program. And so if you'd like to, we can talk a little bit more specifically about that. It's really not that hard. It's just a matter of reading and writing. And if you'd like to, I can go into greater detail about you know, getting all those types of, you know, becoming more involved with that.
Well, Mr. Garza, I have dedicated this evening to you, and I want I want you to talk as much as you can in detail. If you got to give them websites to go to or whatever you can do to help them. And I must say this, when I hear you talk about it's a five-year – he's been working for 5 years with the GSA. I worked for 20 years because that five-year contract I had with GSA, they will ask you at the end of that contract, do you want to extend your contract? And if you have a good supplier, and one of the things, Mr. Gross, I I run into all the time is when people ask, what can they sell to the government? One of the things that people need to understand, you know, if you are a woman-owned business and if you are a small business, CSA know that you are not a manufacturer. They know that you are not an ISO manufacturer because the manufacturer is the source of supply most of the time. And when I say that, when I first started, I always would look at Pep Boys. And when I would go into a Pep Boys store, and people, I look around Pep Boys or Amazon, you know, one of those auto zones, you see tires, you see oil, you see so many other things in that particular store. But that store did not manufacture any of that. So what that store is a distributor. And Mr. Garza, a lot of people don't speak on being a distributor. Okay, but being a distributor means that you can sell to the government that manufacturer products. In other words, if you work at a manufacturer that manufactures actually tires, or if you work at a place that actually do make, you can also, or if you work at a place that do circuit boards, and you learn about circuit boards, you can also be a small business to distribute circuit boards. Mr. Garza, if I'm wrong, please stop me. Because that's how I had to get started. I did not manufacture brooms. I don't have a manufacturer for brooms. But my first contract with GSA was to sell them brooms. But I had to find a manufacturer who could manufacture that specification that the government was requiring, which was not hard at all. But when I found that manufacturer in Mexico who had that certain type of coin, for that coin broom, I was able to sell those brooms. Same thing about if you have a person, manufacturer who do toilet paper, and you want to sell the government toilet paper, they buy a lot of toilet paper. So, Mr. Garza, kind of just tell them about how those contracts work. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I do see we have one person with the hand, but Mr. Garza, do you want to explain that, what I just told them? Or you want to
elaborate on that? Okay. Sure, sure. You bring up a very good point, and then we can go to your caller. You're right. One of the other good things about the GSA Schedules program is it allows federal agencies to do set-asides. And so you're right. If you're a small business, you're not really necessarily competing against manufacturers. I mean, in a way you can be, but you might also be competing against other small businesses that are just in the same situation that you are, either you're a woman-owned business or a veteran-owned business or a small disadvantaged business. And so what will happen is the federal government, because they want to make sure that they meet and exceed their small business goals or social economic goals, they will create set-asides, and they're free to do that on the GSA schedule system. So let me just give you, for instance, let's say on one of the things that you can do in GSA is you can provide janitorial services on the GSA Schedules program. Right now, we have close to 100 contractors located around the country that do janitorial services. But as you might guess, let's say if you're doing janitorial services down here in Texas, you're not necessarily going to be competing, looking for work in New York City or Los Angeles or something like that. You want to look at just what's here and available in Texas. So what's going to happen is when a federal agency, let's say in Texas, wants to do a set-aside, they might just go to the GSA schedule system and say, hey, give me all the contractors that might be in Texas, and let's say there's maybe 20 contractors or so. And then out of that 20, could there possibly be maybe 5 of them that are women-owned businesses or small disadvantaged businesses? And if they have at least 2 of that social economic status, they can create a set-aside. And so when they do that, when you are competing for contracts, you're not competing against, you know, those 100 contractors around the country. You're just competing against maybe the contractors in your neck of the woods. And so you might be just competing against 5 other firms or, you know, 10 other firms or something like that. So it makes it a whole lot easier for you to compete for that business and hopefully win that business. And so that's why one of the reasons why we always encourage small businesses to get on GSA schedule is because as we get more and more small businesses on GSA schedule, it makes it a whole lot easier for federal agencies to create those set-asides. And when you create those set-asides, you're giving small businesses a whole lot of more opportunities to win contracts through a competition. And that's one, but for us to do those set-asides, we have to make sure that we have plenty, at least two of that, those small businesses within the local area or whatever the competitive area is, and that makes it easier. So, yes, that's why we always like to encourage small businesses. And we can talk about that a little bit later on, but I just want to also, for those people that are listening, and I know we're probably going to talk about it a little bit later on, but let me go ahead and give you my telephone number. If that's okay. Of course, it's my telephone number, my business phone number at GSA is area code 817-932-3117. Let me repeat that number, area code 817-932-3117. Feel free to call me during the business day and stuff like that, and then I can walk you through the steps of becoming a GSA scheduled contractor, and hopefully we'll have more than enough time to go into greater detail. But I want to go ahead and give some time to your caller.
Okay, well, we have one caller, and I'm going to put him on. Yes, caller, this is the 817 number. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm enjoying the show. Thank you, Verna Melton, for having this information on the air. But this is a question to your guest, and it has to do with international. It's two questions, actually. One of them is, y'all keep using the term, the phrase set aside. I mean, I want to know the official definition of that. That's probably a short question. And the more complicated question is, what is a popular international product that would, you know, that you know of, a popular international product when people talk about having to, and do you have to go over overseas, or do you have to travel a lot of time to implement that product? That's my two point.
Okay, those are really good questions. Is it okay, Ms. Melton? I can go ahead and address that.
Oh yes, please.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about the set-asides. I think that's a very good question because you're right. And not to get too technical on you, I don't know if you know this or not. The federal government, we have something called the Federal Acquisition Regulations, also known as FAR, F-A-R for short. And you can find it online. If you like it, you can do a Google search and put in F-A-R, or Federal Acquisition Regulation, and you can actually find it. But be real careful. It's like 52 chapters, so it's quite extensive reading. But there is a chapter in the Federal Acquisition Regulations that's known as Part 19. And Part 19 deals with the Small Business Act that was created back in the 1950s and stuff like that. But what happens is it told the federal government how to do set-asides, and you can find that in FAR Part 19. So let's say, like, if you do a Google search, just put in the search box FAR Part 19, and it will take you to the FAR Part 19, and you can actually read how the federal government does set-asides. Let me go ahead and give you the Reader's Digest version of how the federal government does set-asides. What happens is we can do set-asides either based on whether if you're a small business, or let's say if you're a small disadvantaged business, or if you're a woman-owned business, or a hub-owned business, or veteran-owned business, and stuff like that. But what happens is when we create a set-aside, what we like to do is we like to make sure that there's at least two of that type of business available. And if there's at least two companies out there that can do the work, then we can create a set-aside. So there are ways. So what you want to do is, a little bit later on, if we were to go to the GSA schedule contract, you can actually find out who are the small businesses on the schedule. Then you can also break it down by women-owned or veteran-owned or hub-owned or whatever like that. And then if you see that there's at least two of those companies in that social economic category, then the federal government can do a set-aside. I always like to tell small businesses especially that, you know, hey, let's say like if you find out that a federal agency is not meeting their small business goals and stuff like that, you can easily go to them and say, hey, I'm on GSA schedule and I'm a woman-owned business, and I know that there's at least five women-owned businesses on the GSA schedule. You can go to that federal agency and say, hey, can you create a set-aside? Because I know there's at least five women-owned businesses on here, and if they'll take that into consideration, and if they like what they do, and because it meets the rule of two, which is what you read in FAR Part 19, then that means they can create it as a set-aside. And so that's a great way for you to build your business, is if you know that there's similar types of businesses on GSA schedule, you can actually go to federal agencies and say, hey, last time you went to full and open competition, but maybe this time you should go and look for small disadvantaged businesses, because I know there's plenty of small disadvantaged businesses to do a set-aside. And so you're free to do that. So, yeah, that's one way that you can compete for business in the federal government, and that, and you're allowed to do that. Now, on the international, let me give you, for instance, on that international question. You're right. Let's say, like, we have, as you can guess, we have military activities in Europe and Asia and stuff like that. As you might know, in Europe especially, they have different electricity and stuff like that. You know, it's not what you would find here in the States. And so what happens is we have contractors that provide, things like, you know, washers and dryers and refrigerators and stuff like that. But they're made to the electric currents available in Europe, which is different than what you would find here in the United States. So that would be one example of where there's an international product that you wouldn't necessarily find here in the States, but you might want to sell to federal agencies located in Germany or Italy or Great Britain, because that's where the military base or State Department activity is located at. And they need something that can work on the current electric current that you can find in Europe as opposed to here in the United States. The other thing that we also find out is we also have contractors, providing services. For instance, let me give you another good instance. We have contractors that do translation and interpretation services. So what happens is, let's say they might have a base here in the United States, but they might want to do translation services or interpretation services for a State Department activity located, somewhere in Europe or in Asia or Africa or whatever it might be. And so that's something that you could possibly do. And so that would be another international service that you could find on the GSA schedule. Good questions, very good questions.
Yes, well, I appreciate you answering those questions. What about any services you can think of, any other services internationally speaking? And that'll be my last question.
Some of them are would also be like IT.
I don't know what's going on, but I hear a little noise in the background there. But I think I can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, that's fine. The other one would probably be also like IT services, information technology services, doing things that would do that. The other thing would be also people that are able to do cell phone service that might go international as opposed to being here in the States. Another good thing that you'd also probably see is we have a lot of people that provide equipment and stuff that's utilized by the Defense Department over there. Currently, we're not in a war situation, but if we were, it would be almost everything that would go over there. Whether it would be, things that you would have to bedding, if you have to, provide housing and stuff for military members overseas. It could also be anything that would be like furniture. GSA does a whole lot of furniture, but not only furniture for an office, but also furniture for dormitories or cafeterias and stuff like that. So you'll see a lot of that type of equipment too. I used to joke. Let me give you one story. I used to be involved with metal fence posts that we used to buy from a contractor here in the States. And I was always concerned that one of our largest customers for metal fence posts was actually the U.S. Navy. And I always asked myself, why is the U.S. Navy buying fence posts? But at that time, they were actually buying fence posts because they were trying to create fences around Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And apparently what happens at that time, this was more than 20 years ago, the Cuban people would probably destroy the fences every so often to try to get onto base. And so the U.S. Navy would have to buy new fence posts. And, of course, they would have to buy them from a manufacturer here in the United States and then ship them out to Cuba and then reinstall those fences around Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. So, I mean, that gives you another idea about, how you can do business around the world because things, like I said, it can be either things from information technology to translation services to all the way to fence post. Anyway.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Was your question answered?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. All right. Mr. Garza, one of the things that I heard that listeners say about more foreigner activities, in other words, if a person is doing service, suppose a service contract. In other words, GSA does two things. They buy products and they buy service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that everyone wants to know, products or service. And if they are buying a product, do GSA still demand that that particular vendor, such as a small business, have a letter of supply from that manufacturer? Do they still require that?
Yeah, they do. Whenever you provide products, as you might know, whenever you're doing work for the federal government, especially with GSA, we have something called the Trade Agreements Act. And so, as you can guess, we don't want to buy things from mainland China or from Russia or from Cuba or other countries that we don't have friendly relations with and stuff like that. And so what happens, but earlier you mentioned that you bought brooms in Mexico. Mexico is part of the Trade Agreements Act, and so that's okay. You can buy things like that from Mexico or other foreign countries and then do that. What happens is, you're right, if you become a GSA scheduled contractor, one of the reasons why federal agencies like GSA scheduled contractors is because you've been vetted. And one of the ways that you get vetted is to make sure that you're in compliance with the Trade Agreements Act. And you're right. When you make an offer to GSA to join the program, we're going to ask you to complete what's called a letter supply. And a letter supply is, we provide you a template. So we give you the template. And on the template, it says two main things. One is that you do have a source of supply. In other words, you do have a manufacturer, a distributor, or something that's providing you with products. You have a formal agreement with them. The second big statement on the letter of supply is that your whatever products you provide are in compliance with the Trade Agreements Act. And so you get your manufacturer, a distributor, to make that statement, and then they give you that letter of supply, and then you give that a copy of that letter of supply to GSA. And hopefully it will be a true statement. And you should have to make sure that this is very careful because, as you might have heard, several years ago there was a big controversy that I think it was Office Depot or one of the big office supply stores and stuff like that that have a GSA scheduled contract. They were providing things that were made in China. And because of that, they had to pay a fine, and they had to correct their contract and take off all those items that they were selling from China by mistake. And so that's something that you have to be real careful about and make sure that you're always in compliance with the Trade Agreements Act. But that's part of the process of you becoming a GSA scheduled contractor.
Okay. Mr. Garza, we have another call coming in. Would you mind?
Sure.
Okay, caller with area 610 area code. Come on.
Hi.
Hello?
Good afternoon. I'm sorry. Good evening, Mr. Garza.
Okay.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Thanks.
I had a question. Is there a streamlined process to being on a GSA schedule?
Well, we always like to say it probably, in some cases there are. Now, let me give you a few instances, if I may, we'll go from there. And hopefully this will answer your question. If not, feel free to ask a follow-up question. So, yes, let's say like if you're in information technology that you'd provide, like cloud computing and stuff like that, GSA does have a program called Startup Springboard, and this is for companies that are involved with information technology. We have a lot of startup companies that they've, you know, worked with cloud computing and stuff like that, but they might be interested in, they might just be setting up their company, and they don't really have that much history yet. And so in the Startup Springboard, what you will do is you'll be able to get an expedited process to get involved with the GSA Schedules program. You still have to meet pretty much all the same requirements. It's what we'll do is that we'll assign staff members that will essentially hold your hand through the process. And so that's something that's out there. It's called the Startup Springboard program. And if you like to, I can always send you or any of the other listeners information available. It's available at gsa.gov. And so it's just a program that's out there. Another way that you can do that, make it a little bit easier for you to get on GSA schedule, is I always like to tell you that, let's say, like, if you want to start the process of becoming a GSA scheduled contractor, let me just give you a time frame of what to expect. So I always like to tell small businesses that are trying out for a GSA schedule program, it's probably going to take you about 75 staff hours to make an offer to GSA. And the way I calculate that is that if you're a slow reader like I am, it might take you about 20 hours to read the 300-plus pages of the solicitation and stuff like that. But if you're a quick reader than I am, then it might take you less than 20 hours. Then it's going to take you about 10 hours to gather things like a letter supply or financial statements or a price list and stuff like that, or a technical narrative that you'll have to do if you're providing services. But a lot of people already have that information, so it's just a matter of gathering it up. And then the rest of the time is you have to type in your information into what we call our electronic offer. When you're dealing with GSA, you don't deal with paper. We always just deal with electronics, and we have something called electronic offer. And so, again, if you're a quicker typer than I am, then it might take you less time to type in all that information into the electronic offer. So now once you submit your offer to GSA, it goes to one of our acquisition centers located around the country. And then what will happen is you will be assigned a contract officer. That contracting officer will then work with you on, setting up your contract. So what they'll do is they'll evaluate your offer, and if they have any questions, they'll go back and send you a letter and give you ask you to clarify some whatever it might do. Then we might have to negotiate with you over your contract terms. And then as soon as we come to terms, then we will create that contract. Normally it takes anywhere from, 3 to 6 months to get a GSA scheduled contract. Now, you might also have heard that sometimes it can take up to a year. And normally if it takes up to a year, it's because you're going back and forth on clarifying your offer or you have very extensive negotiations. But I might want to point out to you that one way that you can expedite that process, in the solicitation that we will send you to start the program for GSA scheduled contract, we tell you what our negotiation objective is in setting up a GSA scheduled contract. We like to make sure that we're getting prices that are equal to or better than what you're offering to your most favorite customer. So if you come in and say, hey, my most favorite customer gets 10% discount, then if you give us an offer that we're getting at least also the same type of 10% discount or greater, then we can give you a contract. But if you come in and say, my most favorite customer gets 10%, but I'm only going to give you 2%, we're going to question why you don't think the federal government deserves the 10% or even a better discount. So like I said, we tell you what our negotiation objective is in the solicitation. That's public information. We don't hide it from you. And then what you want to do is you want to create an offer to GSA where you are meeting our negotiation objective, and that will cut down the amount of time it takes to get you the contract. Because as soon as we are getting a really good deal from you, then we can create the contract. And look, there's a lot more details to it like that, but I just want to give you an outline of how you can expedite the process just by making sure you're meeting our negotiation objective.
Okay. Well, we have other callers.
Thank you so much.
And caller, did she answer all of your questions for you concerning that, the startup screen board?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. And Mr. Garza, is there a number that she can call in case she has
let's go ahead and repeat my phone number. It's area code 817-932-3117. I will be available. You can feel free to call me at any time during the weekday. I work, Monday through Friday, standard business hours. And so feel free to call me at area code 817-932-3117. And that's a direct line, so you're not going to a operator or anything like that. If you want to also send me an email, my email is albert.garza. Garza is spelled G-A-R-Z-A, Z as in zebra, at gsa.gov or G-O-V. And if you'd like to, I can show you how to find my contact information at gsa.gov.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Garza.
Okay. Now, we have other callers, and if you want to talk to Mr. Garza, I have a question. All you have to do is punch your number one. Punch the number one if you want to talk. I have a question for Mr. Garza before I get. Okay, Mr. Garza, we got one more call here.
Sure.
And let me put them on here. Okay, caller, go ahead.
Yes. Mr. Garza, one question in which I like to ask you is the fact that a lot of people think it's, the government specifications and requirements are so expensive. Could you possibly tell them the simplicity of your organization in reference to getting the proper price for the different products and putting together the complete contract that is required through your BPA, so therefore they can be more comfortable in knowing that this is only one particle of the project, and when they put it all together, that's why the total bid will be accumulated for. Would you please break that down for them, please?
Sure, sure. Let me and hopefully that there might be a two-part answer because you bring up some really good points, and I do want to elaborate on that. Let me go ahead and go with the first part of the answer, if I may. And if I am not answering the question, feel free to ask a follow-up question. So first part is, especially on the GSA Schedules program, that's the other reason why federal agencies like the GSA Schedules program, is because the GSA Schedules program was meant to go after for commercial items. And so you're right. What we're looking for is we're looking for things that you can buy retail throughout the United States. And so when you're looking for, when you're providing products, if you provide it commercially to private sector accounts or to other governments and stuff like that, it's probably very good for the GSA. And I might want to point out to you that we have in GSA, you're right, we do have specifications. There's things called as military specifications. There's also federal specifications. There's also qualified product list, and we can go into all of those. But then there's also something called commercial item descriptions. And on the commercial item descriptions, we're actually just describing what you're going to find out in retail markets throughout the country. And so you're not necessarily meeting a government specification. We're just trying to describe what's available out there in the commercial marketplace. So if you're providing things that are commercial, it's very easy to meet the government specification, so to speak. Now, we also do have things that are very specific to government usage and things that we want to do. And so we might have either a military specification, in other words, it's for a military application of some sort. There might be what we call a federal specification and that. Now, I might want to point out to you that all those specifications are available online. And if you need help on locating that, feel free to email me or call me, and I can help you locate all those specifications or the commercial item descriptions. That's all usually public information, so it's real easy to find, and so it's really not that hard. And so that's out there. So hopefully that helps you on answering that question. And I was just going to point out, just for you and all the listeners, if you want to find me also at gsa.gov, if you go to gsa.gov, our homepage, you might notice that on our homepage in the upper right-hand corner, there's a search box. And in the search box, you can just type in either Albert Garza, my full name, or you can also ask for small business support. And when you do that, you'll go to what's called an index page. And on the index page, just click on the small business support. And when you do that, you'll get a list of all of my colleagues that are small business specialists for GSA, and it's in alphabetical order. So it starts off with Chastity Ash, who's actually in Atlanta, Georgia. But if you go down a little bit, you'll run across my name, which is Albert Garza, and then you'll get my email address and my phone number. And so you feel free to call me, but you can also call a small business specialist closer to you, like I said, that we're located across the country. So very good question. Thank you very much.
So the part two of this question also is basically what you're saying. When reading and or interpreting the specification, the abbreviation of certain specs is also identified during that same paragraph of the BPA, right?
It will be. Oh yeah, that brings up a very good point. What happens is when you're and that also brings up a good point, and I apologize I didn't address it earlier. We also have things that are called national stock numbers. A national stock number is a 13-digit number, and it just identifies a certain type of product. Normally, that product might be tied to a federal specification, and you're right. What you want to do is you want to make sure that you meet that specification, and it will always be in the solicitation, or it will be incorporated as part of the solicitation. And you're right. We give you guidance, and what you want to do is satisfy that requirement so that you can provide that product. And if you like, I can tell you even more stories about national stock numbers and how you can use them in terms of marketing. And national stock numbers are also available, and you can find out where the national stock numbers are. And there's millions and millions of national stock numbers.
Amen. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Garson. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Mr. Garson, what I'm hearing, too, is that a lot of callers and a lot of people, GSA is such a big, huge step one. And I have to keep saying this because if it had not been by the grace of God that my friend told me, personal friend told me about this, and Mr. Heber, I was telling you, he works with GSA, I wouldn't have never been able to learn all of this. And he helped me a lot. And that's the reason why I don't charge folks for helping them, because he didn't charge me. I enjoy doing this. I really do, because I know there's a lot of money to be made. Mr. Gossett, there is a lot of money to be made. And this is before the President Biden even did this executive order. When I started with GSA, it was with, I think, George Bush was in office. And when George Bush was in office, he made sure he stated, if that business is, you first look for a small business, give that contract to. If they can't do it, then you go allow the other businesses, to help with their contract. Well, George Bush was there for a long time. And when he was there, I made a lot of money because I was always getting help by different agencies. And I had worked before, but I didn't have the help like I did with GSA. I worked with the county. I worked with in the private sector, and I worked with the city officials. A lot of times when I wanted contracts or I went there to try to talk about a contract, I normally had to take people out to lunch, meet me for lunch, or do this. I was out of more money just trying to take people, and I didn't have that kind of money. But with the government, that you cannot do that. You know, they won't even work with you if you try to take them out to lunch. And that was really good for me. But I noticed this, Mr. Garza, when you said that in service, the government also needs, you were talking about leasing buildings. You also talked about manager consultants, management consultants. And I think you and I will talk about that later on, because many people need consulting of how to actually get started in a business or with a business. And I'm noticing that, you know, since I've been doing these last two contracts. And I want to say this also. As I listen to you and I listen to my pastor talk about the upside-down world that we live in today, I was reminded about a book that I just wrote, and it has the Good and Bad Partnering book, where I talk about my experiences and my encounters. But if it had not been for GSA, I would not have been able to, that book, I was glorifying the fact of what happens in the number of threes. I was able to sell a part of my business, which was my stock in GSA to be able to get out of debt. After being shut down for 2 years with the COVID, no business, no money, nothing, I was coming in, I was able to sell my stock that I had in GSA for all those years to become, I mean, debt-free. I talk about that in my book. And when I tell you all that GSA has a, it's something that I want everybody to understand and try to get a little bit of the pot, a little bit of the pie while you can, because there's money to be made there. I still sell to the government, but I don't sell on a GSA contract. I sell open market. But Mr. Garza, I probably will be back with us. I'm looking for a GSA contract probably next year. I'm not for sure. But can you kind of, we're going to take a break in a little bit, Mr. Garza, because I know you may want to take a break, but I want you to talk a little bit more about GSA and tell them about the avenues that they can go down and actually start their business. I mean, the products in which y'all buy. I mean, they need to learn that. They need to hear about that. It is a lot of products that you all buy, and they may not understand exactly from seasoning, from pepper, salt and pepper, that you all buy from food, salt and pepper, to air conditioning, as well as cars.
When that's I true.
Cars,
that's right, too.
Well, black cars as well. So mm-hmm. if you want to take a break, let's take maybe like a, it's about 9 o'clock. Can we take about a 2-minute break?
Sure. Well, however you want to do it.
Okay, well, let's do that, and let's come back to our show, okay?
You want to start right now with the break?
No. I mean, let's take a break for about 2 minutes, and then we'll come back.
Okay. Sure.
Back with you. Let's get back to our show now. Okay, Mr. Goss, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Thanks a lot.
Mr. Garza, I am really enjoying this, and I want to tell everybody, I want to tell the world, I love Mr. Garza, Mrs. Alvarez, and she's with SBA. She's coming on next week. Bridget Moon, you all has been here. Mr. Garza, you and Ms. Alvarez been here for the last, I know, what, 3 years we've been doing this?
A little bit longer in person and stuff.
It's been over 3 years.
It's been probably a half a dozen years, probably, and some of those was during the pandemic also.
Okay, yeah. Well, Mr. Garza, we're going to have to probably do another.
Sure.
Actually, face to face, I'm gonna try to get a gym. I'll either church to help me put this on, but I just think that it's so much out there and people wants to do and they can do. A lot of senior citizens who may not be able to hold a job may want to go in business for themselves and selling some things. When I tell people about if they're a caterer or if they have space they may want to lease, or if they can just have a maintenance crew. There's so much they possibly can do with GSA. Or not only with GSA, but there are so many other agencies, government agencies. I'm talking about myself because I'm talking from experience. When I was selling bags to GSA, I did not know which bag to sell, but when I found out I wasn't a manufacturer, I learned that there's more. When GSA gave me the schedule, let me start back. When GSA gave me the schedule for packaging, Mr. Garvin, you can kind of, insert if you need to, but under the 81 schedule for packaging, under that schedule, I was able to put anything in a package. If it was a brown bag, a sandbag, it could be a sandbag, it could be a feeding bag, it could be a pollen bag. And when I call these bags names, some of those bags they use in nurseries, like in the Department of Interior, which is over all of the parks in the United States. Okay, the Department of Agriculture, that's not GSA, it's the Department of Agriculture, who actually use bags for potatoes. They're called knit bags. So if you find a manufacturer that does bags and they do five different type bags, you can actually work with five different type agencies who may buy those bags. And when I tell people that don't have just a one-track mind, make your mind versatile. If you're going to get a GSA contract for packaging, not only can you sell bags, sandbags, potato bags, pollen bags, those are what the seeds go in for, freeze, but you can also sell boxes of all types. So you got a box manufacturer there. You got a bag manufacturer. You have different people coming together under your one contract. And I could possibly show people better than I can talk to them over this podcast. So that's why I'm saying, Mr. Garza, one day we may need to do this probably later on in the year to help them to understand what I'm trying to say. Because even with Unicor, I don't know how many people know what Unicor is, but Unicor is a federal prison. The federal prison of Unicor buys a lot of things, from boxes, bags, from seasoning, food. Just if you can just work with that one agency, you can make a lot of money. So, Mr. Garza, you kind of got an idea of which way I'm trying to go with this.
And yeah.
If you can talk to them about some of this, what I'm saying, I would appreciate it.
Sure, sure. Let me go ahead and do that because you brought up some really great points. And let me also, for your listening audience, go ahead and tell them how they can easily find out about the breadth of services and products that GSA has available. I don't know if you know this or not. Again, let's go ahead and refer back to gsa.gov, which is our homepage. If you go to gsa.gov homepage, when it pops up on your screen, what you want to do is scroll all the way to the very bottom. And when you scroll down to the very bottom of the screen, over in the lower right-hand corner, you'll see a section called Tools. And in the Tools section, there's a hypertext link that says GSA Advantage. GSA Advantage is very much like Amazon.com, but for the federal government. It's an electronic catalog. And so when you click on the GSA Advantage web link, it will take you to GSA Advantage. And like I said, it's an electronic catalog. So you can actually go there and you can actually put in, you can break it down either by products or services. And then there's a lot of other ways you can do it. But what's real great about it is you can go and look and see all the types of products and services that we have available there. And not only that, but you can also find out who are the current contractors, what their prices are, and stuff like that that they have on these products and services. And then just like what Ms. Melton was bringing up when she mentioned about Unicore, when you go to GSA Advantage, you can also find about other information about our what we call our mandatory sources. And mandatory sources are like Unicore, which is the federal prison industry, but there's also another mandatory source called the National Institutes for Severely Handicapped, also known as NISH. And then there's also another one called the National Industries for the Blind, also known as NIB. And they also have a trade name like Unicore. They're now Source America and stuff like that. And so you can actually go to them and find out about all of their products that they have available and things like that. But you can go through the GSA Advantage, and it's a great way for you. Now, you, of course, as a citizen, you won't be able to buy anything, but you can still window shop and look and see all the different types of things that GSA is involved with. And so feel free to go in and explore it. Like I said, it's open to the public. You won't be able to buy, but you'll be able to at least see everything that we buy at GSA on GSA Advantage.
Okay.
Mr. Garza,
the Army Exchange, is that under GSA as well? Army Exchange stores and the product that's being
sold? I didn't hear that. Can you repeat that, please?
I said the Army Exchange, the commissary.
Oh. No, it's not. No. No, the Army Exchange is not on GSA. If you like to, as you might know, the Army and Air Force Exchange Service, also known as AFES for short, it's located here in the Dallas area as their world headquarters. But they have their own website and stuff like that. And so if you like to also go after businesses, they also have a small business office. And if you'd like to work with the Army Air Force Exchange Service, feel free to contact me. Again, I can be reached at air code 817-932-3117. And feel free to call me, and I can refer you to the small business office at the Army Air Force Exchange Service. And they are looking for small businesses also. It's more of a retail business, as you can guess.
Okay. Let me ask you something. Under the executive order that's now, was the Army also a part of that order to have set aside?
It should be. I'm not sure about what their goals will be, but each federal agency was encouraged to increase their goals for small disadvantaged businesses, and they had to make sure that they meet those goals by 2025, if I remember correctly. What happens is each federal agency is building up to what their end goals will be, and so what they'll be doing is they'll be building it. So they're looking very aggressively for small disadvantaged businesses, and like I said, we have to meet the requirement by the year 2025, which is just around the corner.
Yes, I noticed that's on the first page of this executive order.
Mm-hmm.
So it must be 2025 and that's the baseline screening that they're asking for all socioeconomic small businesses and undeserved entrepreneurs recognized in the Small Business Act. So I'm hoping, too, that we can help people get involved with that and actually help the federal government agencies learn and learn about more businesses and that can actually produce products as well as services. We have one more caller. I don't know if she's still on the line. I see just a hand up here. Mr. Garza, let me go back and see if she wants to. Yes. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, your number is pushed. Do you have a question?
Hello?
Okay, do you have a question? Caller, do you have a question?
No.
You don't have a question. Okay. Well, you have pushed the number.
Oh, I think that was done by then. I was still trying to think of I had a particular question at the top of my brain, but I completely forgot about
okay.
it.
Okay. 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 But thank you for listening. Still listening. She's still there listening, though. Well, okay, Mr. Garza. Is there anything else that you think that we possibly need to know about GSA or how one can actually possibly learn about it online or something like that?
Sure. I would like to address two things, if I may. One, I would like to talk about subcontracting opportunities, and we can go into greater depth about that. And then also, you had mentioned earlier that you were also interested in, working with our public building service. And if you like to, I can address that too. Which one do you think would be the best topic for your listeners? Is subcontracting or working with our public building service and construction areas?
Well, subcontracting, really both of them, there's a lot to learn.
Well, let me just say this about subcontracting, because, we've talked a lot about, because you mentioned earlier about, young businesses or businesses just starting out. And when you mentioned that, I was thinking, that's a great point to bring up, because let's say if you are a young business or you're just starting out or you just put out your shingle yesterday, and so you don't really have that much experience under the belt, so to speak, you can go after subcontracting, and it's pretty easy to do that with GSA. If you like to, feel free to call me or email me, and I can show you how you can go to gsa.gov, and you can look up all of our contractors. There's something that we call the GSA e-library. Like I mentioned earlier, when you go to our homepage, and if you scroll down all the way to the very bottom, in the lower right-hand corner, there's a section called Tools. And earlier I mentioned about GSA Advantage. Right above the GSA Advantage link, there's another link that says GSA e-library, or e-library for short. If you click on the e-library, and if you go over to the – when you get to the e-library, if you go over to the right side of the screen, you can – there's a drop-down menu, and you can look at all of the programs that are available, contracting programs that GSA has within our Federal Acquisition Service. And what happens is when you click on those individual programs, you can actually find out who are the current contractors in all those programs. Some of them are large businesses, some of them are small businesses, but the ones that are large businesses, I don't know if you know this or not, large businesses are obligated to the federal government to do subcontracting. And so if you're a small business and you're just starting out, you're doing these large businesses a favor by approaching them and asking if you can become a subcontractor working on their prime contract, because they need to meet their subcontracting goals. So let's say that if you're a small disadvantaged firm, and you see that there's a large prime contractor that does what you're doing, feel free to approach them and see if you can operate as a subcontractor on their contract. And that's real easy to do, and I can show you and all your listeners, I can show them how to find those opportunities. GSA makes it very easy, because when you go to our list of contractors, if you click on the company name, a lot of times it will take you to another screen, and that screen will give you the email address for that company. So you can shoot the email address. With the email address, you can send them maybe an email to that company with your capability statement, and you can tell them about what you can do, and maybe you can make that business connection. So hopefully you can find an opportunity that way. So feel free to call me at area code 817-932-3117, or my email address is albert.garza@gsa.gov, and I can give you more information about how to go after subcontracting opportunities.
In other words, Mr. Garza, all the infrastructure that we see, of course, the high bridges and the big buildings that's going up, but mostly the infrastructure that's going on. lot of that is federal contracting. Am I correct?
Yeah, yeah, that's a very good question. As you might know, the Biden administration came up with, and Congress came up with something called the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, also known as BIL for short. And here in the state of Texas, where we're located, we have actually across the country, there's projects that are happening. And I might want to point out to you that if you'd like to, I do have a PowerPoint presentation that was given out in November of last year. And if you'd like to, if you call me or email me, I can send you that copy of that PowerPoint. And on the PowerPoint, it gives you all the projects that the federal government is going to get ready to start implementing over the next 5 years or so as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law. There's projects, you know, on the southern border and on the northern border. There's a lot of projects throughout the country. And so what you do is when you look at this PowerPoint presentation, you'll be able to pinpoint where all those projects are going to go. And then as you might guess, on GSA will normally advertise these opportunities on SAM.gov, which is the federal government's website where you can look for free at all the opportunities that are valued over $25,000. It's called SAM.gov, SAM.gov. And, again, I can show you where you can find all those opportunities. And you're right. Let me give you, for instance, like here in the state of Texas, we have a lot of land port of entries located on the Texas-Mexico border. And so what we have to do is right now we're doing a lot of paving projects. Excuse me. We have a lot of paving projects where we're looking for contractors that can do paving work at these land port of entries. But then they're also going to be constructing new facilities. And there's going to be a lot of work in the El Paso area, just to give you a for instance. But there's also a lot of projects, like I said, throughout the southern border and also the northern border of the United States.
Okay, for paving. When you say paving, yeah. I mean concrete. Am I correct?
I'm sorry, what?
That if you say in paving, that's concrete contractors.
In this particular case, I don't know if it's going to be concrete. I think it was mostly asphalt and stuff like that, but it could potentially be concrete also. It matters what's suitable for a particular land port of entry. As you might guess, we do have a lot of land port of entries where there's a lot of truck trafficking, and so that we want to make sure that we create a road surface that can handle the heavy truck traffic that goes across the border all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, with do GSA or this particular order that the president, the executive order, there is a super train that's supposed to be coming from coming through Dallas all the way down to Houston. I don't know if that project is where it is right now. Let's just use that for an example. If that was going on right now, for instance, if they had to have all this dirt hauled back and forth, a person who had a dump truck could possibly get a contract with the government just for hauling dirt. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're right. And then what we'll probably want to do is, if you'd like to, I can always do some research for you. Even if the project is not going to be done by GSA, I can look at SAM.gov and find out which federal agency will actually be responsible for that project.
Yeah.
And then you're right. I have counterparts across the country that are small business specialists, and I can talk to my counterparts and find out how they're planning to do that procurement. You're right. We might either have small businesses doing a portion of the work, like you said, hauling dirt and stuff like that, or you might be able to do subcontracts with maybe a larger contractor who's going to need people to do certain things that are related to that project.
Right. And one lady contacted me, and if I had a GSA contract, which I do not, I told her because of my age, I'm not going to tell my age, but a GSA contract gives you, 5 years? You have to be able to be determined for 5 years and work that contract. And but she told me even if I didn't have a GSA contract, I was a small business. And they had a huge contract for construction. And all she wanted me to supply them was the gloves. Gloves for that project. is what she actually needed, because it was going to help her. In other words, she had to have so many small businesses to work with her, because she was getting the big contract, but she had to list so many small businesses had to be able to work with her. So what I'm saying, subcontracting can also consist of small business contracting.
That's true.
It can be catering to that crew every day, making mm-hmm. sure those men had a sandwiches or catering. It could be actually a runner. If you have a truck and they need a runner to run back and forth, getting them parts. In other words, some people can learn how to create jobs if they just visit some of the big jobs. And when I say big jobs, I'm talking about big construction sites, and talk with those supervisors that know they've got this, that they need small businesses to work with. We got some more callers coming in. I think I got two or three more. I got three hands, six sitting up here. But Mr. Garland, do you mind if I take some of these calls right quick, please?
Sure. Yeah, please.
Okay, let me okay, there it is. Okay, caller, go ahead.
Yes, I asked a question earlier, and I have another question, and it has to do, again, with international soil. I'm very interested in both domestic and international. But with regards to international products, I didn't think of this until after you was talking. That was this. How do you, if for some reason, let's say you was doing business with Mexico, just pick on Mexico just for a second. I'm not necessarily looking at Mexico, but I'm just trying to ask a question here. But wherever international store you have to go, do you have to buy your own plane ticket? I just don't know. I'm clueless. How does that work if you have to go? Let's say you have a service you're going to provide and for them, and you have to literally go over there and provide a service, not a product, but you have to be in person. How does it work with accommodations, getting there, and so forth? That was my question.
Oh, you know, that's a fantastic question. I'm glad you posed that, because let me go ahead and address that. You're right. Let's say if you do a service contract and you're here in the States, but the State Department is asking you to go down to Mexico City to do some work for the embassy down there, but they need you to be on site in Mexico City. What will normally happen is, even though you might have a contract for your services, whatever they may be, you might not have a line item for travel. So what will happen is normally travel, if you have to travel to provide a service on a federal contract, normally what will happen is the federal agency will have that as a separate line item on your contract. And what they'll probably do is they'll probably make the stipulation that you utilize the government per diem. And so what they'll do is they will say that, you know, you can travel down to Mexico City, but make sure that you stay within the international per diems, which for the hotels and the meals and incidental expenses. Now, you can always spend more if you want to, but the federal government will only reimburse you up to what the mandated per diem is. And I might want to point out to you that if you want to find out what the per diems are available, not only in the United States but around the world, you can do that at gsa.gov. When you come to our homepage, there's a tab at the very top called Travel, and if you click on that, actually right above that by the search box, there's a place where you can do a per diem lookup. And so what you do is click on that link, and it will take you to all the per diem tables, and you can find out that. So, but whenever you are providing a service, whether if it's here in the States, let's give you another example. Let's say, like, if you're here in Texas and someone asks you to do a service in New York City or Los Angeles, and you might only have staff here in Texas, but you don't have any staff in New York or Los Angeles, what you're going to do is you're going to say, yeah, I can go ahead and you'll be able to – you'll have a line item for your service that you're providing, but what they're going to do is they're going to have a separate line item for your travel, and again, they'll probably stipulate that you keep to the federal per diem rates, at least we'll reimburse you up to the federal per diem rates. If you want to spend more, you're free to do that, but we're only going to reimburse you up to the per diem rate, and so that will always be a separate line item. So you don't have to account for travel in your pricing when you do a service for GSA schedule contract. So a very good question.
Now, what if it's just a product? What if it's just a product and not a service, like you're selling tires for some place, or I'm just...
No,
just What if it's a product, but it's out of the country? The product that you're providing for Venezuela is something, or for, I don't know, Belize, you're providing something for them, a product, not a service. And how does that work? Do you have to just, the government make you do it online, or can you go down there and just do some things with this per diem, you know?
Well, Now, on products, it's a little bit different. On products, what will happen is if you have to, let's say if you manufacture the items here in the States, but then you have to ship it overseas. No, there's several ways that you can do that. Either you can account for that, and you can go ahead and charge your customer agency to pay for that, or what you can do is you can have your products shipped to what's called a containerization point, and there's a containerization point on both the east and the west coast of the United States, and usually these are maintained by the military. And what you do is you ship your item to those containerization point, and then they put it in a container, and then they ship it through military transportation to wherever it needs to go. And so what you do is you just pay to get the item to that containerization point, and then the military picks up the rest of the charge to take it to wherever it needs to go. And so, like I said, you will have that option, and you'll be able to work out with your customers whether if you want to, they want you to take care of the transportation to their foreign location, or they will make arrangements with you to get it to the containerization point. And usually these overseas military bases, they have containers going to them all the time. And so what they do is they put the equipment or whatever the material is in those containers, and then they ship it through military transport around the world. And so all you have to do is get it to the containerization point.
Okay. Okay.
Well, thank you. That was a very good answer. Very interesting information. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, caller. Okay, Mr. Garza, when I hear you talk about how they ship these parts or equipment all around the world, there used to be a New Jersey port and a French Camp port on the East Coast, West Coast. And they had ships coming in just about every day or every other day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and when the Obama administration came on board, I think he was trying to cut down the expenses of the spending of the government, and some of those ports came inactive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and a lot of things changed. Whereas a lot of those ports kept inventory for GSA. GSA, mm-hmm. they had, it was like an inventory type facility. When those boats came up to their dock to pick up brooms or pick up supplies to go overseas, GSA had an inventory in all of these ports. Okay, when the last president, Donald Trump, came on board, those ports were still shut down. They still have not opened up those ports. Is there any way possible that you see that the government may open those ports back up?
I haven't heard anything about it, but you're right. The general trend over the last 20 years or so has been to do away with a lot of our containerization points and stuff like that on both the East and West Coast. And you're right, we are drawing down to the bare minimums and stuff like that. I don't know what the current status is. Normally those ports are managed by the Defense Logistics Agency, so I'm not really that familiar with it, but now that you question it, I might want to start looking into it. But the way I understand it is usually we're trying to maintain at least one port on both the East and the West Coast, and then there's other ports around, like in Honolulu and in Japan and stuff like that. Usually there's at least one on both the East and the West Coast. But you're right. It has been dwindling over the years, not only for GSA, because GSA used to have 10 different warehouses around the country. Then we had 4, and now we have none. And so, and you're right. We rely on the Defense Department depots, our warehouses, and port activities to move our equipment around.
Right, right, right. And there, I mean, you don't have hardly any. Is DLS, the Defense Logistics, do they use those ports at all?
I'm not really sure. I apologize. I want to know that offhand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Well, one of the things that I see that I really am, I really want to try to help people with is sharing with them the little bitty things that they can sell and make a lot of money. Introducing them to big contractors who do a lot of those, in other words, they're building highways, they're working on highways. This infrastructure is so, it's got so much money. And they need small businesses, but they have no way of getting to the small business and telling them what they need. Besides, sure. Some of the times when they go online to put this app to small businesses don't see it. The real businesses who really need to work, they don't hear about it. So our podcast, we're going to do the best we can with this podcast to try to get the word out to people to listen. And I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful that we are doing this. And next week we're going to have SBA come back again. And SBA has a she's going to be talking about a lot of things that SBA do to help small businesses as well. So Ms. Alvarez, she's very, very, very smart with that. She's business development. She's over the 8A business development program there for DFW, for this entire area. And with the 8A program, people can have that contract for how many years, Mr. Cousins? Do you recall?
For the 8A program, usually it's 9 years. Because of the pandemic, they've increased it sometimes to 10 years, but traditionally it's 9 years.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a long but good contract that anybody can get and can keep. And I do know some people who does maintenance work. Janitorial work as well. I'm going to try to have them on the show to listen to her next week because they could possibly get a very good maintenance and janitorial contract with some of these federal offices and can be in business for a long time. And I want to thank you, Mr. Gardner, for taking out your time to come with us this evening and to be a part of this. The Army Air Force Exchange, do they take reference? In other words, if a person is a GSA contractor or a woman-owned small businesses, do they work with them? Do they have a set-aside program as well?
They don't. As you might know, the Army Air Force Exchange Service is a little bit different. They don't necessarily work through the federal acquisition regulations like we do. They're more of a retail operation, and so they have a little bit different rules. But they are looking – they do have a very aggressive small business program because what they like to do is find opportunities for small businesses to get involved with their retail operation. They do have a small business office, and they try to keep to the spirit of the federal government's small business goals, even though they're known as they work under a different set of rules than the other federal agencies do.
Mm-hmm. So, first, let me ask you something. If I had, if I was a business owner who actually made my own sausage, or mm-hmm. I made seasoning, or I did seasoning like black eye pepper, black pepper, or black pepper seasoning sauce, Mr. Cousin. You know, good seasoning sauce. And if I made some good pork sausage and things like that, you know, where would one start in trying to sell their products into a, Army Air Force Exchange as well as the Unicorn, you know, who buy a lot of food all day, every day.
Oh, that's a very good question. And of course, I should say that you're making me hungry, but that's okay. But yeah, what happens with the Army Air Force? What happens with the Army Air Force Exchange Service is what they do is they will normally work with a small business. They have a program where, let's say, like if you're here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I think there's an Air Force Exchange Service company. I'm sorry, there's an Air Force Army Exchange at Carswell Joint Reserve Base in Fort Worth. What they will do is they will work with you, and let's say if you have something that's a local favorite, they will put your item in their local shelves and see how it does. And then if it looks like it's getting good sales, then they might move it to other stores throughout their network. And then as you grow your business or you grow your name, they can put it in more and more stores around the world. And so that's one way to do it. You're right. And then on Unicor, like the Federal Prison Industries, now what happens like with federal agencies like the Federal Prison Industries, they have their own contracts, and you can find them on SAM.gov. And then if you like, you can provide – what they normally do is they will have contractors to provide the food services and stuff like that. And what you're going to do is you're going to work as a subcontractor to their food providers. And then what they'll do is they'll put your item onto their menu if they want to add it in there. And that's what you do is you serve as a subcontractor to the main contractors. Now, I might want to point out to you, if you want to work in meal service at a federal military base, there is also the Defense Department has something called the Prime Vendor Program, and they have contractors located around the world. And again, what you do is you go to those contractors and you become a subcontractor providing your foods or materials to them, and then they provide it as part of their food service menu to military members in at military mess halls around the world.
Mm-hmm. And they're called the Prime Contractors?
The Defense Department, it's called the Defense Logistics Agency. They have something called the Prime Vendor Program, and that's what they do. They have large contractors around the world that do they serve military meals at specific bases in different parts of the country. And what they do is they have a list of these contractors, and then what you do is you contact those contractors for subcontracting opportunities to provide, you know, certain food items or food service items to them.
Okay.
And
okay.
So that's how they do it.
And then I might want to
also point out on the GSA system, we do have a special item number for people that provide emergency water and coffee and stuff like that whenever there's a national emergency where you can provide, let's say if there was a tornado or something like that somewhere around, you could provide bottled water or coffee service or stuff like that that could be help for the first responders that go into a national emergency.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm learning a lot too tonight, Mr. Gardner, because I didn't know nothing about the prime contractors. But I would like to tell everybody too that about SAM and about those NIC codes, because to properly know if they're looking for a different type contract than possible that they can do. Should they go to their NIC codes first and then put their NIC codes in the SAM, Mr. Garza, or how would you suggest they do that?
You can start with the NAICS codes if you want to. As you might know, there's also something called product service codes, and if you like to, you can look for those. They're available if you do like a Google search for product service codes. But you're right. The NAICS codes, and NAICS stands for North American Industry System Classification Codes, or Classification System Codes. And what it is it's a six-digit number. And as you can guess, the federal government likes to classify everything that it buys. And so that's why we created these NAICS codes. And so, you want to identify what those NAICS codes are, and that will tell you how to participate in federal procurements. And you're right. If you have the NAICS codes, you can go to SAM.gov, and you can do a search and find out how the federal government buys that NAICS code. And then that will give you an idea about, you know, how to position yourself for opportunities within the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's the difference in a PSC and a NIC code?
Normally the NAICS code is a much more broader term, because that's just one way to do it. And the product service code is usually a little bit more, it's really a subset of the NAICS code, and so it gives a little bit more of a definition. And so you could use a product service code. Like we mentioned, normally people start off with the NAICS code first because they want to get more of a broad type of definition. And then if you want to pare it down, then you might want to tie it into a specific product and service code. And normally, just to give you, for instance, on product service codes, if it starts with a number, it's a product. If it starts with a letter, it's a service. And so what you want to do is just the way that you work.
Now,
so if you have a
Mr. Garza, repeat that again. If it starts with a number?
Oh, yeah. They're called product service codes. Usually they're four digits. And normally if it's a number, if it starts off with a number, you know, 0 to 9, that means it's a product. But if it starts with a letter from A to Z, then that's a service. And so what happens, if you like to, there's a booklet on the Internet. Just Google product service code. And it will take you to the booklet that tells you what the product service codes are. And you can just – it's sort of like a Bible, and you'll be able to look at the table, and you can figure out what your product service codes are. You can pick and choose whichever product service codes apply to your company. And like I said, if you're in a service business, your product service code will start with a letter. If it's a product, then it's going to start with a number.
I see. Well, that's something that – I didn't know that neither. That's something to know. Huh.
Yeah.
That's what you want. Okay, now we have the GSA, they have people that can help. I mean, you know, if people may not want to come to you directly, or if they want to get some help, you know, one-on-one help, do you suggest that they call somebody like SCORE, or they get a private person to help them, or an independent contractor maybe?
Oh, you know, it's you're right. I mean, if you want to go to a, there are government consultants out there, but be real careful about that. I mean, you're free to go to them if you want to, but just be aware that sometimes consultants can run anywhere from, you know, $3,000 to $20,000. Excuse me. And sometimes they can do really good work. You don't necessarily have to do that. I might want to point out to people that when you're working with GSA and other federal agencies, the system is meant for do-it-yourselfers, and so you can easily do it yourself. You're right. If you want to, you can either come to me as a small business specialist, and my role at GSA is to answer your questions and guide you through the process and stuff like that. Now, I can't help you on the pricing, or I can't help you on the financials, but I can help you on all the bureaucratic stuff. And usually it's the bureaucratic stuff that will trip you up. And so feel free to call me or my colleagues across the country, and we can assist you with all the bureaucratic stuff. There are other places where you can get free counseling assistance. You're right. Mm-hmm. There's one thing you can do is you can go to the SBA. The SBA has what's called small business development centers located around the country, and they provide free counseling services to small businesses. And then also the Defense Department has a group of people. They're now known as APEX Accelerators. They used to be known as Procurement Technical Assistance Centers, and they provide free counseling services also. And so, yeah, you're right. You don't necessarily have to come straight to me. I mean, I welcome you to come to me as a small business specialist, but I also have other people like the APEX Accelerators and the Small Business Development Centers that can also provide you with free information. And then last but not least, if you want to go to a consultant, you can, but just remember that consultants are going to charge you for stuff that you can normally get for free.
Mm-hmm. And they have the APEX Accelerators now?
Yeah, that's a new name. Last year, they used to be known as the Procurement Technical Assistance Centers, or PTACs for short, and they're located around the country. And if you want to search for them, just do a Google search for they have an association. And so if you look for what's called APTAC for the Association of Procurement Technical Assistance Centers, it will give you their website, and you can still go to it. It's still active, and they have a map of the country, and all you do is you click on the state, and it will tell you where the PTACs are. Starting this year, just last month, they changed their names to APEX Accelerators, And again, they now have a new website called Apex Accelerator, so you can look them up, and they have a map of the country, and you can find all the same centers. It's just a new name for the same services that they used to provide.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I want to also put this in too. When you go in under SAM, be careful going into www.sam.gov. Because sometimes if you go into that wrong website, when you're trying to register with SAM, you may get a different agency that will charge you, that wants to charge you for that. And that's the wrong agency. You just need to click out of there and find the correct agency, and that's the one that is free. But there is no cost to register with SAM. And I think
you're right.
Time. Yeah,
you're right. That's a very good point. When you're working with civilian agencies, always look for GOV or Gov. And then, of course, all military activities will have the suffix MIL for military. Mm-hmm. If it's a .com or .org, then it might be a private organization and they might charge you.
Right. And I try to tell people all the time, because doing business with the government, there is no charge to do business with the government. To learn how to do business with the government anyway. So be careful with these websites if you won't give them your information, all your information, and for them to be calling you every day for wanting you to pay for it. So, Mr. Guz, I appreciate you so very, very much coming on this evening.
Okay.
And I'm very thankful to have you as my friend. So I hope that you'll be coming back before the year's up. We have a lot of things that we want to do. Next week, we're going to have Nancy Alvarez. I'm always calling Nancy different names, but it's Nancy Alvarez, and she's with the SBA. And once we have her, and I think Bridget may come on with her, I'm not for sure, but once we do this month of SBA and business, we have to go into and talk about the concern for homelessness and people being evicted. We have a problem here. And a lot of people has called us to talk about these problems and to hear solutions. And hopefully we can bring them some solutions and some resources over our podcast. And that will happen after next week. I'm looking forward to as many people as we possibly can tell about to call in if they have any questions concerning business. Because this event and next week will be our last event talking about business, because we're going to move on another phase. But Mr. Garza, we're coming back to you and Nancy before the year is up. So
sounds good.
Give us some good information. I mean, whatever you have coming up, let us know, because we're going to be coming back to you probably in September, hopefully, or even before.
Well, it sounds good. Thank you very much, Ms. Melton. I appreciate all your kind words. I look forward to working with you in the future. Again, thank you very much for allowing me to be on your podcast tonight. I really enjoyed my time with you. So thank you very much.
Thank you. You need us to write a letter to your director or something. I know you had to get clearance. You had to get clearance from Washington, D.C. in order to come on tonight or something like that.
No. Everything was okay. I look forward to working with you in the future.
Well, thank you so very much, and I will keep you posted on that. And hopefully, we will have a sit down where we can actually face to face with the audience. And if we can get that going this year, I'll let you know. Okay.
That's great. Thanks, you. Thank you very much.
And I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight and being a part of this podcast. If you have questions, you can always contact Mr. Garza, like he said, and or send him an email. And thank you, and we look forward to seeing you all again next week. Okay?